Welcome to a Design for Living Big Book OA Intergroup. My name is Tali, and I am a sugar addict, compulsive overeater, and your meeting leader today. To open the meeting, let us have a moment of quiet meditation followed by the set-aside prayer. God, please set aside everything I think I know about myself, my recovery, my spiritual path, and you, for an open mind and a new experience with myself, my recovery, my spiritual path, and especially you. We start this meeting by remembering our common purpose to extend the heart and hand of the OA Fellowship to those who still suffer. Let us be mindful of OA's unity with diversity policy, which respects our differences yet unites us in the solution to our common problem. Whatever problem you may have with food, you are welcome at this meeting. Our topic today are Principles 2 and 3, Hope and Faith. We will read a section of the Big Book, hear from our speakers, and move into an informal guided discussion. The guided discussion is a space for any questions you may have on what you heard here today about Overeaters Anonymous. Could Carmel please unmute and read the paragraph starting on page 54?
Carmel, compulsive eater. We found, too, that we had been worshippers. What a state of mental goose flesh that used to bring on. Had we not variously worshipped people, sentiment, things, money, and ourselves? And then, with a better motive, had we not worshipfully beheld the sunset, the sea, or a flower? Who of us had not loved something or somebody? How much did these feelings, these loves, these worships have to do with pure reason? Little or nothing we saw at last. Were not these things the tissue out of which our lives were constructed? Did not these feelings, after all, determine the course of our existence? It was impossible to say we had no capacity for faith, our love, our worship. In one form or another, we had been living by faith and little else. Thank you.
Thank you, Carmel. I would now like to introduce our first speaker, Kevin P.
Hi, everyone. My name is Kevin. I am a compulsive overeater, binge eater, and sugar addict. And I wasn't prepared to go first, but here I am. I'm just really so grateful to be at this meeting, to see so many familiar faces, some new faces, and to get the opportunity to talk about hope. In particular, I'm going to focus on hope. I'm not sure where I land on faith, but I'll get there. I decided one of the things I learned in this program was to slow down when I'm reading something and to pay attention to the words and to actually take the time to look them up. And so I actually looked up hope. I mean, I know what hope means, I think, but when I looked it up, it's just interesting. It kind of put a finer point on it. So I'm just going to read the definition I found from the Oxford Dictionary, that hope is a feeling of wanting and expecting a particular thing to happen. It signifies a desire coupled with confidence in the possibility of its fulfillment. And I have that today, right? I have a desire for recovery, and I expect that it will happen. It has happened and will continue to happen. And for me, that wasn't always the case, right? Just 2 months ago, actually, I was in the worst relapse of my life. It was 3 months of just constant binging and eating against my will. And for the first time I've been in program almost 15 years, and I'm somebody who's had the experience of chronic relapsing. And It was the first time where I thought, oh, I might actually not come back, right? I might not come back to these rooms. And if I'm being really honest with myself, I actually left OA for a couple months. I mean, I didn't sign any release paperwork, but I wasn't here, right? I didn't show up to meetings. I didn't answer calls. I was just really out. And that was a new development in the progression of my disease. But to look back now, I'm in such a better place. And I spent some time today thinking about what that was all about. And I realized that this program of recovery is just full of contradictions and full of things. This is a really countercultural, counterintuitive program, right? Like, first of all, it's free, right? Where else are you going to go? You're going to meet a group of people who will support you, take your calls, help you every step of the way, and not want anything in return, right? And this idea that we have to, if we want to keep it, we have to give it away. That's weird, but it's true, right? That vulnerability is our strength. That's the thing that binds us together and keeps us, at least keeps me, in the middle of the herd, so to speak. And the other thing that's strange too about this program, but like, I win by surrendering. Years ago, when I was really new in program, after trying every diet in the world, essentially, I was really amazed that, I was weighing and measuring, something I had done when I was doing other, weigh and pay programs, but there was something really different about the experience, right? Weighing and measuring in recovery felt like freedom. And I shared that at a meeting, and somebody just, I don't know if it was crossed off or not, but anyway, I just got the message at the meeting that they said, yeah, when you surrender, they stop firing at you. And that blew my mind. It was like, oh wow. And another contradiction is that hopelessness leads to hope, right? I've recovered for today, right, from a seeming hopeless state of mind. But the hopelessness for me was me running the show, me trying to get well on my own power. That was a hopeless, impossible situation. But once I realized that, then I found this program, right? Then I found hope, right? I could believe in a power greater than myself. I could, if I took all these steps, I could find recovery. And we talk about the program as being very spiritual, but I actually think it's quite scientific. I think this program is an evidence-based program, right? I've never been asked to just take something on faith. I've been asked to, just try it and see what happens, right? Experiment, right? If if I didn't think I was a compulsive overeater, well then go out and experiment. See if you can eat like, a quote normal person. Turns out I can't. I've done the research. I think I have a doctorate at this point in relapsing and in this disease. But everything's evidence-based, and even the hope I feel today, right? I do one thing, and right, I turn a problem I'm having over to my higher power, and that problem gets fixed. And so that I have hope the next time an even bigger problem will get fixed. And for today, I live in that place of I know, and I expect that I will receive help from my higher power. Now, it doesn't come, I don't get to sit in my recliner and just say, I hope my life will get better. I have to take action. I have to move. And I think the reason why I was sort of a little tongue in cheek, sort of like moving away from the word faith, is to me, faith can sort of lead to, in my mind anyway, sort of fantastical, magical thinking. Like, oh, I have faith this is going to work out, but like totally abdicating all responsibility. And I'll say, I know that's not what is meant, in the steps, right? There's nothing about just throwing your hands up and saying, if it's my higher power's will, this will happen, then it'll just happen. Like, no, Right? I heard somebody say once, if I wanted to pray for a ma if I pray for the mountain to be moved, I better expect to wake up with a shovel next to my bed. Right? So, or one of my other favorite ones is, when in doubt, pray like hell and row to shore. Right? That I have to take action. I have to do things. And as I said, I'm somebody who's been a, who has experienced chronic relapsing. And this go around, I got really good and desperate. And I had to really be willing to look at things. And one of the things I learned about myself is that by the time the obsessive food thought has taken root, where it's I'm really ruminating about it, for me, it's almost too late at that point. It's gone too far. That I needed a much stronger early warning detecting system. I needed to know when were those moments when I was drifting towards relapse that were so subtle I wasn't paying attention. My sponsor likes to use the metaphor of recovery as being a highway, and that, me taking the off ramp to relapse. And the problem was I had relapsed so many times, I had smoothed the path so that I couldn't tell. I couldn't pick it up when I was moving towards relapse. And so I really sat down and looked at what were the behaviors, that were leading me to relapse. And surprisingly, most of them had nothing to do with food. I mean, sure, if I was just randomly changing my food plan for no good reason, if I was, eating foods that were little, just a little too sexy or getting a little too excited about, certain things, sure, those things would lead me to relapse. But things like staying up too late, right? Things like obsessively watching TV, compulsively spending money, just, if I got a phone call and my first response was, oh, or rolling my eyes, or just like not, feeling like people were bothering me, or, going an entire day with not thinking about anybody other than myself. These are all, signs that I'm moving towards relapse. And I've come to learn in this program that there is no such thing as stasis. I'm either moving towards or away. And normally that sort of black and white thinking, it comes from a sense of perfectionism, and that's not what I'm talking about. It's more of just an awareness that, to stay in balance, I have to work, I have to do the work. And so today, I send my sponsor an email every single morning with my food plan, my action plan, and I report on those behaviors. I actually have them in, copy and pasted in the body of every email, and I indicate, did I do it? Did I stay up to, 11 o'clock at night, knowing I have to get up at 5:30 in the morning? Did I not? Did I or didn't I make my bed? It sounds so simple, right? But not making my bed in the morning is one small step towards relapse. And that sounds crazy to anyone outside of the rooms. But for me to say to somebody, making my bed is a spiritual practice, sounds a little wonky, but for me, it's true. And I have a friend of mine in this program, and she and I really we've almost run parallel lives in our recovery. And when we were really in it and really struggling, we just sort of we came up with this expression, just water the plants, right? Just do a thing, like water the plants. Like I have to tell you, I used to be a plant serial killer. I would get plants, I would have them, and they would just die because I just wouldn't take care of them. Now I am surrounded by plants, I take care of them. They bring me great pleasure. I've even had to repot them because they've grown so much, they need more room. Like, and these are all small little things that, that nourish me spiritually, that do in fact give me hope. And, I said earlier that, part of my experience in the program is I work the program, I take care of one problem, I have faith, or I have trust, I have hope that the next bigger problem will be taken care of. My life's not perfect, right? There are areas of my life that I know, will need attending to, but I'm not afraid and I'm not worried about it, right? Like one area is my romantic life. I don't have one, right? I would like one, But I know that if I try to force it, I get the opposite of the Midas touch. Everything I touch turns to shit, right? So if I just like, sorry for the colorful language, but I know that if I just keep my head down and just stay in the 24 hours, that's another thing that I do now that I didn't do before in recovery. My prayer and meditation practice is non-negotiable, right? And one of the things I ask for is, I ask actually for a lot of things. I got a laundry list. One of them being, I pray for the awareness, willingness, and the power to pause throughout the day and ask for guidance. I used to think that I had trouble trusting my higher power because I would keep taking my will back and just kind of doing things I wanted to do. And sometimes that was true, but not always. Quite honestly, sometimes turning things over just never occurred to me. In that moment, I'd never just like, oh yeah, I'll decide if I'm going to take that project or not without even pausing. So it was more of a falling asleep at the wheel rather falling asleep at the wheel, Freudian slip there. Falling asleep at the wheel rather than just refusing to turn it over. And I mean, look, it's not guaranteed, it's not foolproof. There, I pray, and there are times that I still run on automatic pilot, but I've noticed that the lag time is much shorter. I tend to be more aware of when I'm drifting into that space. And I've learned that I can ask my higher power for anything, even something as mundane as, God, please help me to fill out my work journal, right? This tool that I have at work that I created, by the way, to help keep me on track. There are days I just don't do it, right? I've shared before at this meeting that I heard, by the way, anything I say that's remotely witty or, sounds really wise, I got from someone else in these rooms. And I heard somebody saying once, say, yeah, definition of an addict is somebody who finds something that works and then stops doing it, right? So like my work journal worked great. I stopped doing it, right? So I get to ask my higher power to help me, even with that something so small, right? Seemingly ridiculous, but I need that. And when I ask earnestly, I get help. So circling back to the idea of hope, right? That desire coupled with the expectation, today I expect I'll get the help I need if I ask for it, right? If I do the work. And honestly, for today, I'm, in a really great place. I was asked to be of service and speak, and my initial response was sure. That's not my default setting, by the way. My default setting is, ooh, let me think about it, which is a polite way of saying no, I don't want to. And I've got a little bit of a cold, so wah, I should be in bed nursing. Really? I can get, I wasn't asked to go to a meeting in person. I'm on Zoom, right? So, and I'm just actually grateful for that. Grateful for the opportunity to be helpful. Grateful for. Can I make someone's
Cancel
life a
time reminder, 5 minutes.
thanks, Tali. I get to be of service, be helpful, and actually enjoy it. Now, that's not all day, every day. There are plenty of days where honestly I'm doing the minimum. Like I'm checking things off of my list because I said I was going to do it, and I don't really want to have to explain to my sponsor why I didn't do it. And like that's okay. There's sometimes those moments that the thing that is keeping me on the road of recovery is I don't want to have to explain why I made a different choice. And to me, that's just another example of my higher power using my own my unique character quirks for my benefit. But in looking at the things that the I do every day, the structure, it really helps me. I need structure. I need discipline because left to my own devices, I'm a danger to myself. My best thinking got me to, 340, 300, almost 40 pounds. My best thinking, after losing 140 pounds, got me right back there. And, That sucks. I don't like it, but it is what it is. And the weight is coming off slowly. It's, of course I want it to be faster, but like I said, I'm an addict. For me, instant gratification takes way too long. So, but I'm not stressing about it. I'm really not. I'm just like, okay, I got on the scale this morning. It went down. It didn't stay the same. I think if it stayed the same, I might have had a little resentment going on, but it went down, so I'm okay. And yeah, today I'm calm. Today, and it's really interesting in my work life. I'm seeing so many people so agitated and angry and taking things personally, and it's like, wow, I wouldn't have seen that if I was in the food, right? Because I'd be right there with them. And I'm grateful that a lot of things don't bother me for today. The caveat for everything is for today, right? I've friends in this meeting, I've shared many times that for me, my recovery is very much like that movie 50 First Dates. If you haven't seen it, by the way, I highly recommend it. It's surprisingly poignant for Adam Sandler film. But the idea of like I wake up every single morning, complete reset, right? I wake up in traffic, like I'm ready to go. And so there are certain things that, in order to set to protect myself, I don't do. I don't touch my phone before I say a quick prayer. Right. That's just something it's becoming habit. I heard somebody say once, I have to get to God before my brain gets to me. And that's really true. That is my lived experience. And it took me, I think I was in program for like 12 years before this idea finally sunk in that my disease resides in my brain. That is where it starts. I know I've heard that before. I had to have, but it just didn't, I didn't get it. And today I get it that, my brain untreated will tell me things like binging makes sense. And it is, it's logical. In that moment, it makes sense. Like that is the only way for me to quiet the noise. And that's not true for me today. And I'm just really grateful for that. And I'll just say that, if anyone out there is struggling with relapse, I'm not an expert, but I have a lot of experience and I'm really happy to share it. So I'm going to say my number for those who may be listening to the podcast. My phone number is I'm in the United States, so +1 929 287 9086. WhatsApp or Signal are the best way to reach me. And I really mean it. Reach out. I'm happy to talk to anybody who's struggling with relapse. One of my old sponsors used to say, okay, you had a relapse. For God's sake, don't waste it. So I'll tell you, I don't want to waste it, and I think that's a good place for me to wrap up. So thank you so much for the opportunity to share. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Kevin. Thank you so much. I would like now to welcome Sue P to the group. Good morning, afternoon, Sue.
Good morning, Tali. It's a morning time here. Thank you, Kevin. That was great. I am Sue, compulsive overeater, and I'm also dyslexic, and I'm also scattered and all over the place. So I have got a script I'm reading from. I'll try not to look like I'm reading from a script, but I sort of am, and it just keeps me on track for that. I also tried to do hope and faith because it sort of roundabout goes into one into the other for me. So for me, what I wrote about was my first meeting was about 20 years ago in May, and I haven't left, but my hope and faith was a bit scattered in those first 7, 8 years. They didn't always come together. So my first meeting was nearly 20 years ago. My first real experience with hope, and what I've had sort of three different types of hope, or three different experiences with hope. My first hope was when I came to a meeting and that there, I heard the stories from the other people there, and they sounded like me, and they They did stuff like me with food, and they also had something in them that was recovery, or and I couldn't see that happening for me, but there was something in them that triggered, like, well, there's something there and they're doing something. Maybe I should look into what they're doing. I believe whatever the program was, and that others were getting the help from it, then they seemed to understand what my problem with food was. So as I continued to attend meetings and made connections with OA friends, I was guided towards the steps, and I knew that I was, like, step one, I knew I was defeated. I'd spent, many years up until I was 40 trying to, fight this by myself. I'd been in another different program before that, so I was clean of that, since my son was 6, and then I came into OA when he was 13. So, that was my first, there was a, like, I understood step one in the fact that I was living it. I knew that was true, that I had no, nothing in me to get me out of where I was with the food. And the second one was, because I was working the steps with a sponsor, and I was reading and studying the big book, and, I was putting myself in as the addict. I had to, not stand on the outside like I usually did. I was always on the outside of something, looking in, going, oh, yeah, but I wasn't ever stepping up. So it was the first time I had to step into something, and recognizing, the same, isms and the same behaviors, and needing comfort from food because of the world. And it was my view of it. It wasn't the world, but it was my view of the world that kept me in the food. So from a young age, I was re using the wrong substance to relieve my pain. I was dyslexic, so school was horrendous to me. I could do math and science and things like that, but a lot of it was, reading and English, and it was gobbledygook. I had no idea what they were talking about or what they wanted me to do, or why we put a comma there, or why. I just didn't understand the concept of language. So, and I tried, 30 years or even more, probably since I was 5, I was always trying to, get it right, get off the food or get into life, sort of thing. So once I was at step two, and having looked at, all those questions, what we read in the start, in that bit about, well, if the stars only came out once every 100 years, what would people be doing? Be out there looking at them in awe, So, and I couldn't, those sort of things, faced with the questions, in step two about, well, what else have I put my faith in? What else have I, looked at with awe? That sort of thing. So, sorry, with my glasses. So there's all these things that I couldn't explain, how, trees grow, or how do, I don't do that. I'm not growing the trees. I'm not moving the tides. It was my, I turn on the electricity, I turn on the light, and just it happens. I don't know how electricity works. It just works, that sort of thing. So based on that, I had to, it seemed to me that, this energy flows through everything that's living, that moves, and no human was doing it. And I couldn't explain it, but I knew it was true. I knew it happened. I don't need to know how this power flows through it. I just need to have a willingness to believe in it. I just have a willingness to believe in it. I was the one, I had to keep, playing. I had to quit playing God, and I had to come to believe that there was something called, I could call God or higher power or something like that. And it wasn't just, there for, the tides, the planets, and things like that. It was also there for me. There was something in it. And that second hope was me, seeing that I was hopeless. So now I could see, my false thinking was the wrong thing. It wasn't about food, it was about my limited beliefs. Hope had arrived again, cleaning up the prejudice I carried about God for many years. And I could express myself even a little bit of willingness to believe. It gave me an opening. That's what happened to me. Just that little bit, just it wasn't a, it was a poofteenth. It was like this big, but it was a change of my thinking about, and it was because of the questions that went, well, yeah, well, I'm not controlling this, not con but it's still working, it's still happening. And I always put myself outside of this higher power. Higher power worked for everyone else, or other people that were skinny, or that had houses or husbands or things like that. But I, like I said, I put myself on the outside because of my thinking. Like it was, it was my thinking that was the problem. The food wasn't the problem. It was the way I thought about life and the way where I put myself, that sort of thing. So it did. It opened up my approach to times in my life when, I was in dangerous situations. Man, I was a drug user. I do, I was in dangerous situations. I was in, I could be so low down, but something, some force got me out of that situation. I couldn't explain it. There was something happened that got me into a different direction and things like that. So that's, that when I look back on that, that was tangible to me. That was something real. It was something like, that's something that, yeah, something was there. I wasn't controlling it, but got me out of there. And I don't know how it got me out of there, but I had to have that hope that was there. There was something there that was looking out for me. That was keeping me from, flipping the car or going in the wrong place with the wrong person, or there was something there that I could tangibly see, and it was personal, and when it made it personal to me, I could then have that, a personal relationship with that power. It wasn't somewhere else, it wasn't in someone else, it wasn't going through other things, but not me. And so, I had that, I was, that brain fog that, like that relentless, all you're hearing all day is a negative, or the, why life isn't good, or why they're not bad, or why I'm not good enough, or, all the fears and that. So, I sort of came out of that brain fog enough when I was doing this. This is something that I felt tangible personally, and I could trust this power. Something was wanting the best for me, and I hadn't had that before. My third hope was that hope in God restoring me to sanity. And that's what grew. It was more consistent, was more expressive. Like, to me, I was such a, fallback person that I never really expressed myself, but it was something that, because I had that hope in me, I could express this more. I don't know if you understand. There was more expression in me to, because of that hope. Like I said, it was more personal to me. My belief in a God of my understanding gave me the growth that step two gave me, to trust in life more. So, hope really led me out of delusion. That first, that step two, it really did take, I guess the constant delusion kept me on that treadmill doing the same thing. So it segued me sideways somewhere, just a little bit, enough to have a different, idea. So, that leads me into faith. And it was a decision, faith was a decision based on step two then, and this was, this for me was always hard, as, making a decision in my life was always, I could never make a decision. That's why I was stuck. Is it the right decision? Is it, is it right for me? Is it going, I was a single parent, is it right for them? And that's why I said I just sort of hung back until somehow life forced me to make a decision. I never actually made a proper decision. So, So when I was faced with that question, looking back on step two, was my limited thinking, what was that limited thinking doing for my life, my physical, my mental, and my spiritual areas? So when I had those things about, the stars coming out, the tides, and things like that, that's something that, it moved me into a position that really got me to see that a decision about God needed to be made, and it says in the big book, either God is everything or nothing. What was my choice? And I couldn't, I knew enough to go, well, that's not my choice. It's that sort of thing. I couldn't, okay, yeah, God's here and God's there. And that, if I'm doing that, then I'm playing God. Either God was everything to me or was nothing. So God was in everything in life, flowing. Like I said, I had that sense of flowing, or there was no God at all. And yeah, I could, something in me couldn't say there was no God, there was something innate in me that couldn't do that. So when I truly looked at those things, I put my, where I put my faith before, as the last pig was saying, I put my faith in other people. I put my faith in having money. I put my faith in, studying, or, people were smarter. If I was just smarter, there's things like that. So there was that people, places, and things and institution. And when I saw how little power they had to help me, and that, it wasn't in my head, it was in my heart, My heart and head are connected, but my heart is the one that, should be directing my head, not my head directing my heart. And that's what, it helped me. And at least then, it was, I could seek a power that was unlimited. If it was in everything, that was my choice. God was everything or nothing. Then, if it was in everything, then that's a power that I would like to have. It was in a consciousness of a presence that was all it took for me. Just that, like I said, that little opening, just having that willingness to look at something like that was seeking God. Oh, seeking God. I didn't know what that was. What's seeking God? Then, within the big book, it comes up. All I had to do was put away, those preconceived ideas and the prejudice against God. That's all it took, was that little bit, because then I could move forward. Then I could have enough faith in this thing that was greater than me to go down different avenues. And what is God for me? Well, what is it? What does it mean for me? Not something before where I'd put myself out of it. So I needed to put faith in this power. It's hard, that's a hard thing, like my will and my life into this thing, and so I had to have faith that even, a tiny bit was enough, and that I'd seen, my hope grow, so did my faith. I'd had that hope had grown, so faith would for me too. For me, it's a step-by-step experience.
Gentle time reminder.
Thanks, Tali. It will always expand, in my life, as long as I have that little bit of curiosity. If I'm trying to take control back again, then again you can see that, coming in, instead of expanding, it starts getting smaller again. And so, again, it's just that decision, and I want this, or do I want something that is God run, when that's why, I ask myself, do I really want to be running this, because I know where it's going to end up, or do, listen, let's get bigger here and, put God into it. There's two things in 12 step that I've heard. There's probably more, but there's two things that stick with me. And one of them is, there's two jobs in a rowboat and God doesn't row. And I really, it's really, and God steers, God's steering. I've got to do the paddling. If I'm not doing the paddling, and if I'm doing the paddling and trying to steer, it's not going to work. I'm going to end up in the reeds and in the river. I'm going to end up going the wrong way. I'm going to end up sideways. If I do what I need to do with this program, and it's an instruction book. So if I do what that instruction book says, then I'm going to be more likely, to end up where I'm supposed to be ended up with all the, I can end up there, but I could have all this fight happening. And the other one is that, we all go to a circus and we go into the circus and it's magical and there's all this stuff and there's a big tightrope walker at the top and the tightrope walker's walking across. And as a participant, as someone watching that, we all trust that the tightrope walker knows what it's doing. It's got its wheelbarrow, it's going across the tightrope. We trust as an audience that that is, their job, they've practiced up, they've done it. And the difference between trust and faith is you getting the wheelbarrow. You getting the wheelbarrow. So, that faith in God, I need to be able to get in the wheelbarrow with God. I'm not standing on the sidelines watching and going, oh yeah, God will do, it's actually getting in the wheelbarrow and doing that work. So if I trust in this HP, then I can have faith that will give me the power to take on life and its dramas, because the dramas are what I make a story about, whereas if I have faith in the God that, okay, this is happening, my mum's got a dementia, just the first signs of it, and I'm staying here with her, and yesterday she got the meds wrong again and she was sick and we had to go to hospital and things like that, but I just had to, it was a process, I didn't panic, it was just okay, watch this, I went into urgent care, we got this sort of stuff. Even when we got home she got really angry and she didn't want to understand, she thought she'd done the meds right, blah blah blah, and it wasn't her mistake, it was a mistake, but getting through that without eating is what is faith to me, that I can do that. Before, I couldn't have done that. Like I said, I've had, so that, the things that I thought before were, I have dyslexia, I'm never going back to school, ever, ever, like ever, and since program, I've done 4 years of study and then little other study things, how'd that happen? I don't know. I was never going to be married, never dating, never anything like that. I'm married. I've been married now for, a year and a half. I've been in relationship with that guy for 13 years. Poof, who'd have thought that? I was never going to travel outside of Australia. Ah, everything's in Australia I need. Everything, I don't want to go out. Ah, I've been to Morocco, I've been to Ireland, I've been to Scotland, I've been to Wales now, So all these thoughts that limited me before. So I've watched life grow seemingly without effort other than faith and a yes to life. That's it. So making a decision to have faith in a God left me open to many more wonderful decisions, extraordinary experiences. And because I've had a new power and came to believe deeply in this power, of course, I'm not going to do it all the time. It's just, I can't, you can't, I'm human. I'm not going to do it all the time, but I'm led back to this power through my connections with fellowship, through reading, through, just through life, going through all of a sudden, there's a reminder from God, hey, where are you going? What are you doing? And I go, oh, yeah, that's right. So,
Gentle time reminder.
thanks, Tali. So I needed to, look at my past and take a step back from that falseness that I had and all the faith that I gave in all the other things. And I needed to take that faith and give it to the one that is deserving, the one that has all the power, the one that is going to help me, because all these, drugs, food, men, shopping, gambling, whatever, they're not, they don't give me any power to handle life as I'm handling it today. And it's, I get to confirm that every day, step one, two, and three. Who's in charge? I'm not. I think I'll choose the one in charge. It's the same thing. I can't. God can. I think I'll let God. There's another thing that I heard, and as the last speaker said, everything that if sounds intelligent, smart thing is from other people in program or stories or something I heard. And there's, you know, the steps and this sort of thing are only a suggestion. You know, that's all they are. You don't have to do them. But as a guy that I heard, you know, went skydiving and that, and he said on the board in the skydiving room was pulling the cord is only a suggestion, you know. So you don't have to pull a cord, you know. You can just keep falling to the ground. So to me, that's what program, I don't have to pull the cord, you know, but I know where I'm going to end up, you know. So each day I need to pull that cord of program and you know, like I said, stepping up and making it, even though I'm dyslexic, even though I have a fear, I even had to write it 50,000 times to make sure I had it in the right order. And I still went off that order. It's still, it's service, and I'm happy to pass on what I was given so freely. You know, I was given this, you know, by a sponsor getting me to study the book and really take line to line, you know, and that helped get my preconceived ideas out of the way. So at least, like I said, I could have that little crack, that little light coming through. And that gave me hope, which gave me faith. And the faith gave me curiosity. It gave me expression. It gave me, you know, passion. It gave me all these things that I didn't have. You know, who knew I liked traveling? I like traveling, you know. It freaks me out, but it's still good. So, yeah, that's, you know, that's all I've got to say on that. But, yeah, I just hope that everyone else can find that little bit of that little crack, that little opening, and by coming to the program that they can explore what that is for them, what that hope and faith is for them. To you all.
Thank you, Sue. Thank you both, Kevin and Sue, for sharing your experience, strength, and hope today. Seventh tradition. According to our seventh tradition, we are fully self-supporting through our own contributions. As we have now moved to virtual meetings, it is important that we continue to be fully self-supporting. This allows Overeaters Anonymous to continue to carry the message to those who still suffer. You are able to send your donations through our website, www.ad4l.info. For those of you able to see the Zoom chat, the link will also be posted there. Thank you all for your support. It is appreciated. Next meeting, a reminder that A Design for Living, Big Book OA is a daily meeting. We are based out of Melbourne, Australia. The recording for today's workshop will be available from our website, where you can also find out about other upcoming events and speakers. Visit our website at www.ad4l.info. Our next monthly speaker series focusing on the principles of the 12 steps will be held on April 12th. The topic principles for number four is courage. We hope to see you there. In closing, I would like to thank you all for your service in coming here today. By following the 12 steps, attending meetings regularly, and using the OA tools, we are changing our lives. You will find hope and encouragement in Overeaters Anonymous. To the newcomer, we suggest attending at least 6 different meetings to learn the many ways OA can help you. The opinions expressed here today are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. Please remember our commitment to honor each other's anonymity. What you hear here, whom you see here, when you leave here, let it stay here. Let us all reach out by phone or email to newcomers, returning members, and each other. Together we get better. To close the meeting, will Leanne please unmute and read the promises?
Thank you, Ms. Talley. The promises. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past, nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of usefulness, uselessness, and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them.